been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And good morning. Welcome to the Wednesday, April 13th edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I'm Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital, of course, sitting in for Bill today. As we find ourselves halfway through a shortened trading week in the U.S. markets with Good Friday approaching, we have a pretty, everything looks pretty, pretty green on the screen today. We had some, we'll get into some economic data that came out. We got some more inflation news from the PPI, that was released this morning. But, across the board, we've got the Dow up 70 points or, 0.2%. S&P 500 up, 0.2% as well, up about 10 points to 44.06. NASDAQ, kind of the leader at the moment for the day, and that's, why, treasury yields are down a bit, in, got as high as about, in that 0.75 range, 2.75, and we're down, roughly to 2.65 at this point, or 6.8, and that's probably, what has the NASDAQ up about 0.7% today, or, 97 points. Gold continues its upward climb, up half a percent today, right around $1,976, kind of getting close to pushing that 2,000 mark. Oil, of course, up above 100 again at 101.93. Bitcoin also up today at 1.34%. So. A lot of spots in the market, are looking well today if you're, you know, if you're anywhere but in cash. From a market perspective, of course, yesterday was a bit of a down market. And so we'll get in here and kind of take a look at, what happened yesterday, and then we'll begin looking forward. But, again, good morning. Welcome to the Wednesday, April 13th edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I'm your host, Barry Kite, filling in for Bill today, and he'll be back behind the mic tomorrow morning. So, yesterday, of course, inflation data was front and center for the markets, both, of course, at home and abroad. We've got some CPI data around the world as well, but in the U.S., the CPI yesterday, we've got followed up by the PPI data or producer price index data today. All of this kind of coinciding with the kickoff of first quarter earnings season. The banks re-in focus this week as customary. They're kind of the first to report. We'll get into J.P. Morgan reported this morning. We've got a few of the other larger banks reporting tomorrow. Before we look ahead, yesterday morning, just about, a little bit before Bill and I came on the show, just about the time, the CPI data was being released. Of course, we had the subway shooting in Brooklyn, and we'd like to send our prayers out to all the victims and their families, as the search continues to apprehend the person or persons responsible for that, just tragic, and just wanted to, mentioned that we didn't get a chance to on the show yesterday, but in recapping the events from yesterday in terms of the market, like I said, all the major equity indexes were down roughly about 0.3%. Of course, the big news yesterday is the consumer price index came in hot in historic fashion. It was right around 8.5% year over year. But it was interesting, the focus was kind of on core inflation, which came in less than expected. And so we kind of got this rhetoric yesterday beginning to develop around the term peak inflation. And so, and when they're talking about peak inflation, I think they're talking about, peak core inflation. And we're all for inflation waning, but, you know, this hope versus optimism in the market kind of continues to baffle us just a bit because, I think it's an important theme because you have, you know, there's a difference between hope and optimism. And so, for example, you know, a couple weeks back, right, we had, kind of the hope that the Ukraine war was going to end quickly. We had some peace talks and, folks were hoping, right, that that was going to kind of dissipate as quickly as possible. Markets, bounced back. We saw a big move back up from the NASDAQ after hitting bear territory on the hope, right, that conflict was gonna find a hopefully a quick peaceful ending. Of course, we're looking more and more to be in the long haul in that perspective. So kind of around the same thing, right, from a peak inflation standpoint. For us it almost seems, wishful thinking, right, in terms of, where we see inflation, the stories that we see out in the markets, of course, the PPI numbers that we received today. It seems that peak level of inflation may be a bit far off, or maybe we sit at the same peak for an extended period of time. And kind of a recap of yesterday's CPI numbers, CPI rose 8.5%. That's a record high. We've got core CPI increased at 0.3%, and consensus was 0.5%, and so the market kind of saw that as a positive, at least for a bit early in the trading day, and then of course markets ended up actually finishing down and so you kind of had this disconnect a bit where we're certainly hoping inflation goes down, but a lot of the things we actually pay for, energy, food, are stripped out of the top line inflation number to get to that core number. So just because the core inflation number peaks out doesn't mean that, as consumers, does not mean that we're all not going to continue to see higher prices, certainly in that food and energy space. And in the second segment, I'll kind of go through some of those tailwinds that we continue to see for a lot of that top line inflation data. The biggest difference in terms of yesterday's numbers in terms of core inflation was that and we hit on it on the show yesterday, was the fact that used car prices went down for the second month in a row, falling 3.8%. And that was, that was really the primary contributor to core inflation going down. Whereas, energy costs and fuel costs, right, were sky high through last month. I think gasoline was up 18.3%. That actually accounted for almost half of all of the items in the monthly increase for the month of March. Where prices were up 1.2%, and the whole inflation story isn't just one here, but it's also abroad. We got some inflation numbers today from Europe. You've got Spain's March CPI number was up 9.8% year over year. UK CPI was up 7% year over year, and that came in a little higher than expected. They were expecting 6.7, and that's actually the highest number they've had over there in 30 years. So most of those were driven by, of course, soaring food and energy prices. So all of this kind of continues our theme, and kind of what Bill's been hitting on in terms of energy, food, commodities, right? Whether it's liquid natural gas, oil, any of the refineries, right? Those that participate, right, in terms of in some of the peripherals, in terms of providing drilling equipment. It's just it's hard for us. Fertilizer, of course, on the food front. It's hard for us to kind of see, any kind of, you know, near-term end in sight, right, in terms of inflation and the producer price index, you know, kind of came in today, and it's kind of a very similar story. Price consumer or producer price index surged 11.2%. It's basically the biggest jump since they began counting that 12-month the 12-month number. So those, you know, those producers are, like we said in the past, are going to, you know, pass that on to us as consumers. So, just a, you know, different, kind of a different take than you might have seen in a lot of the financial news yesterday in terms of, this idea around peak inflation. But, you know, as we go through the show, we'll kind of give you our thoughts and kind of how, where we see the benefits of, you know, where you can portfolio can benefit from inflation, but we'll dive into some of those specific factors here in a moment. We'll be right back. Best Stocks Now. Welcome back here to the second quarter of the Best Stocks Now Hour with your host, Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital. Bill's out from behind the mic today. He's behind the computer looking at charts, but he'll be back behind the mic tomorrow. But, you know, want to continue, you know, we'll continue the inflation talk in just a moment, but from a market perspective, you know, things had a lot of green on the board when we started the show today, and things are kind of sticking around that position. Everything on my screen here is green here. Treasury yields are down, which means bonds are up as well. So not a bad start to the markets this morning. And want to continue kind of the story around inflation. And you know, yesterday you heard a lot of talk of that we've likely hit peak inflation. In our opinion, you know, it appears to be, you know, a bit of wishful thinking. Of course, we hope we're wrong. I mean, we'd all love to pay less at the gas pump and in the grocery store and for everything else. But, you know, I just don't see, it just seems that it's going to be around here, pretty sticky for you know, kind of persistent period of time. You know, the Fed, obviously, in interest rates around the world are, you know, on the rise, you know, in hopes to battle, inflation. But a lot of the things that were, you know, a lot of the inflation we've seen, you know, is kind of, you know, somewhat out of central bank's control. And we'll get into some of those reasons why, as we move through the show. But, important, you know, important numbers, coming out today from a U.S. economic perspective was a producer price index, rose 11.2% year over year. And that's the biggest jump, since 2010. Just so happens, November of 2010 is when they first started calculating the 12-month data on this number, so it's also historically a high. You think about it. Of course, you know, producer price index. What is it, right? It's the, you know, it's the prices that producers are paying for inputs as they're, you know, creating goods or services, and then of course, you know, passing those, you know, selling those goods or services to us as consumers. And so, you know, the idea here is that as producer price index goes up, then eventually, you know, that's almost inflation in the pipeline, that eventually will, you know, part of that, right, is going to make it out to us as consumers. So in terms of consumer price index, right, you know, to me there's a good bit of inflation built in the pipeline that hasn't yet come out to us. So, you know, we can see, you know, that, you know, with that argument, you know, it would kind of mean that we have future inflation to come, or at least, you know, inflation where we're at, you know, at worst currently. When you look at, you know, core PPI, so of course we go into core PPI. Well, you know, core PPI at, for producer price index was up 9.2% year over year. Consensus was 8.4. So that's a, you know, big, big miss in terms of what the consensus was. And so, kept coming in at a pretty hot rate. Diesel fuel prices were kind of a couple of things that kind of jumped off the page at me in terms of, you know, what prices are increasing. Diesel fuel prices surged 20.4% for the month. Other higher input prices, of course, were unleaded gasoline, vegetables, jet fuel, iron, and steel scrap, electric power. So, a lot of those themes that we've been hitting on, commodity-based, energy-based, fertilizer or food-based themes, continue to show up in the data as well. The trick is, you know, how are they, how are companies, and we're going to find out a lot about this, during this earnings season, is how well are those, companies passing along, those prices to us? I think, we've gotten some good, saw a report from Jeffrey Gundlach, who's kind of the new bond king, from Double Line. And he's, he's a big proponent, even if we hit, peak inflation, that, inflation's going to be sticky and elevated for an extended period of time. A lot of the inflation we've also seen has been in wages, and traditionally, wage inflation is very sticky. It's hard. You don't get too many income, downgrades, right? It's not, once you get, especially at the hourly wage level, right? You get a raise, rarely does that, hourly wage, right, go back down. And so those, your price at the pump may go down, but not the price of wages. So, some of this, we've had a good bit of wage inflation, and so those items tend to be very sticky and pretty much persist on an ongoing basis. So when you get when you have those types of thoughts, right, it's hard to see that we've hit a peak inflation in our opinion. You look at Delta earnings came out today; they were. They topped estimates, and you can read through some of the comments from the CEO, from the management team there, and you can see kind of that they've most of their they're being able to pass some of these higher. If you've bought an airline ticket lately, you've seen the price of those tickets have gone up pretty significantly. And they highlighted the fact that they've been successfully recapturing higher fuel prices, driving their outlook to increase 12% to 14% on an adjusted margin basis. So that tells us, right, that those higher costs that they've seen, whether it's in labor, whether it's in jet fuel, they're passing those items along to the consumer. So those things, on one end, right, should be, it translates into, good or better, earnings beats for companies. But at the same time, it reduces, the American consumer and the world consumer as, it reduces the amount of stuff you can buy, right? So at some point, right, that's going to, you would imagine that would have, some type of headwind for earnings for particular firms. The other thing is that it results in higher interest rates, right? Because, one way to battle, inflation is higher interest rates. And then the mortgage application, I think the 30-year mortgage rate came out today. It's, up over 5%, average rate at 5.13%. Versus 4.9, I think, just last week. So, we're seeing these kind of moves, in the markets. We're seeing them in rates, and we're seeing them in what we're paying, and we're going to find out a lot, where we're seeing them in earnings, going forward during this earnings season. But, We'll be kind of already done with the first half. We'll get back to it here in the third segment. Best Stocks Now show. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the second half of the Best Stocks Now Hour. I'm your host today, flying solo, Barry Kite, Plain Hernandez here at Gunderson Capital Management. Bill will be back behind the wheel here tomorrow. But in terms of the markets holding up, things are looking good. Lots of green still on the screen at the moment. So things can change at any point in time, but it looks like we're on a bit of a recovery based on how yesterday ended. But the main big topic today and for the week that we've kind of been hitting is certainly inflation, with CPI numbers coming out yesterday and the PPI number coming out today here in the U.S. And then we also hit on some European inflation numbers that we certainly expect to rise, at least on the top line, including food and energy, given the Russian and Ukrainian conflict. And, you know, that the longer that drags out, and it looks like, unfortunately, you know, it's going to, and that's going to continue to be a tailwind for energy inflation and food inflation, just given the amount of grain, gas, of course, we beat to death in terms of gas going through to Europe from Russia, but the food crisis is kind of an important piece, very very important piece as well around the globe. I mean, you've got countries like Egypt who receive 80% of their imports of grain, right, come from Ukraine, or the Russian region. So as we've hit on a ton and benefited from within our portfolios, of course fertilizer, lots of fertilizer, potash comes from that region, as well as natural gas is an input in fertilizer. As natural gas prices go up, so do fertilizer. Looking at some of these different data points, I think is important in terms of it's not all about used cars, right? It's about what does it take to run those used cars. So you look at, oil prices yesterday, traded up, roughly around 6%. Some of that, different inputs, China, Shanghai relaxed a bit of their COVID-related lockdowns, relaxed is a relative word, given the strictness of some of those lockdowns there, but they did reduce those and allow people to move around just a bit. OPEC also missed some of their production targets, so in terms of supply, right, they're not hitting the targets that world was expecting, the amount of oil that they'd be putting on the market, and also Department of Energy released a pretty bullish short-term energy outlook. So from an energy standpoint, right, there's certainly a lot of tailwinds for the oil industry. Really the only thing that can kind of put a lid on that is going to be demand destruction, right? Us all driving less, using less gas and or oil. And it's hard to certainly given the COVID pent up demand, right, over the last 2 years, it's hard to envision regardless of price, right, it's hard to envision us especially as Americans, right, driving less, You've got more and more companies who are, I think Google came out with a story today, you know, in terms of, you know, wanting their people back in the office at least 3 days a week, starting in March, or I believe it's in May. But we're just going to be, naturally, right? Summer driving season, there's just more demand, for energy, during this type of year, this time of year. You've got, you know, here in the South, of course, our, ACs already blasting. And, you know, when you look at, natural gas, it's, hit another 13-year high yesterday. Coal prices are skyrocketing, I've seen it actually as a substitute, in certain Asian markets where, Asia's, exporting, certain forms of energy, whether it's liquid natural gas or, oil, and then substituting that for coal. Because of the fact that places like Europe, right, are very much against coal, so there it's almost a substitute in terms of energy production, which has caused coal prices to really take a lift. You know, names like Peabody, I think that's BTU, Console, it's CEIX, and Alliance, symbol on that one, I think, is ARLP. Those, benefited yesterday from that one we own here, Devon Energy, from a, oil and natural gas standpoint, continues to do very well. And you've got other things around the globe that are also hurting. You've got a bunch of different things around the globe. We've got a labor strike at Chevron that's kind of slowing down one of the refineries in the Bay Area. You've got, of course, Europe's ban on Russian coal is just now taking effect. So now you've got essentially less. Less supply into the system from a coal standpoint. Yesterday you've got Biden's announced the plan for using corn with more biofuels, right? Allowing more ethanol to be blended in our gas. Currently you've got a 10% cap, and they've changed that to 15% cap between now or between June 1st and September 15th. To me, that's a pretty, we always talk about alternative fuels. I've never been a huge fan of ethanol in general because of the fact that, corn, it either goes, we eat it as food, right? Or animals eat it as food, and then we in turn, show up at our local meat market, right? Or it goes in the gas tank. So it's either, it's kind of an either or. It's not really an alternative fuel. If it's going in a gas tank, well then, that's going to increase the price for, meat or, food costs on the other end of the spectrum. So, that move is expected to reduce your gas price, at the pump around 10 cents a gallon. That's easy to see from an administration standpoint, right? Because what you're paying at the gas pump. It's harder to see in terms of how that relates to your food costs, because it's going to create another 25 million to 45 million bushels of corn demand for ethanol, whereas, that increased demand, farmers or feedstock, right, could have used that as food. So you're going to have, naturally those reductions in gas prices are going to be flow through to likely to higher food or corn prices, which we've seen kind of corn continue to hit decade highs, whether it's corn or soybeans are beginning to soybeans, wheat, certainly primarily wheat being. From the Ukrainian conflict. So, and the last piece is we've got, now we had the Canadian trucker protest. Well, now we have one on the southern border in Mexico, which is inhibiting, I think up to 30 million in fresh produce up to this point. So we've got, another strike on the southern border that's affecting everything from avocados, tomatoes, green vegetables. You've got, one south of New Mexico is starting to take hold in terms of a blockade, which affects, computers, certainly for Dell and HP, as well as, car parts and many things. So you're still, we're still looking at those supply chain bottlenecks, right, that we've heard so much about. And, they don't seem to be lifting, anytime soon. And when, as soon as one lifts, something else, fills its place. But in the last segment, we'll look at some earnings that have just came out here, to kick off earnings season. And we'll try to find some green, some names in the market that we can profit from for your portfolio. But we'll be right back. Best Stocks Now. Welcome back to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. I'm your host, Barry Kite, wrapping up the Wednesday, April 13th edition here. We've got some earning news here. Markets continue to be in the green for the most part today. I've got some interesting earning news from a couple financials that just started. Going to have a couple bigger banks tomorrow. I think we've got Citi. I don't think Bank of America reports until maybe early next week, but J.P. Morgan, haven't got a chance to dive completely into the transcript here, but it's some interesting points. J.P. Morgan, had a miss, pretty decent miss in terms of their earnings. They were off by seven cents, so they had earnings per share of 2.63. or $2.63. They're supposed to come in around 270. Revenue for the revenue was down 5% year over year, and shares are down a little over 3% today. I think some of the unique parts that I noticed is, they noted some $524 million in credit losses. I believe some of those or most of those have to do with, Russian or Ukrainian conflict. But they're, as Bill mentioned, haven't seen a lot of deals this year. And so their investment banking arm was down. Their trading revenues were up. But it'd be interesting to see how some of these more diversified banks, right, where they have more trading, they make revenue off investment banking versus your bread and butter banks, right, your more regional banking system. It'll be interesting to see the dichotomy between those two, because your traditional bank, right, or what I would refer to as traditional banking, taking in deposits and then lending those out to others. You're making money on that interest rate spread. And so as interest rates go up, and certainly as the yield curve steepens, right, regional banks tend to do, well in a rising rate environment. And that's, financials tend to do well in a rising rate environment. It just depends on, the type of financial. And so JP Morgan's an interesting one because they do make so much money from trading, investment banking, right? They're not just, strictly kind of a bread and butter bank. So as you're looking through and trying to position your portfolio for higher rates, regional banks are kind of a place to look as well. BlackRock, also reported today. They're one of those that had a good bit of exposure to Russia. They missed revenue in Q1. They did beat on earnings. primarily they actually reduced some of their expenses. But it's still that dichotomy between kind of traditional banking and your big conglomerate financials. I think it's an important distinction to make, and just pay attention to that as you're trying to position your portfolio for higher interest rates. Bed Bath & Beyond falls. They, you know, kind of more to a supply chain. You know, they came in, they had a rough earnings outlook. I think the stock was down, 7% or so at one point today. And noted their supply chain issues. They just didn't have the inventory, had inventory problems, so they didn't have they didn't have anything to sell us when we walk in there with that 20% off coupon, each time. So, just a couple of quick earnings notes I wanted to mention in terms of a couple of names we own here at the firm that are kind of jumping off the screen today, and CrowdStrike actually had a great day yesterday. But CrowdStrike, CRWD, of course, cybersecurity, one of the leaders in that particular space. They're up 5.4% today. In terms of our holdings, right? Probably one of the higher PE ratios companies that we hold. But the reason being is, right, it's kind of a, number one, it's a hedge against Russia and Ukraine conflict, right, in terms of Russia, implementing some cyber attacks, right, on the U.S. and others outside the region. And so we've held, we've liked them before. We've owned them in the past. We own them now. They're kind of going against the grain in terms of those low PE names that we've been a fan of. But you got to have some tech exposure, and so you can participate on those days when tech is doing well. And so CrowdStrike's been a good name for us, and the primary reason we've included it in the portfolio. From a earnings growth standpoint, right? I mean, they're projected 63% year-over-year growth this year, and so we're certainly paying up from a PE ratio standpoint, but they also have a significant amount of growth to back it up. And I've got time one more to get in here. Tech Resources, and that one's TECK. On the symbol, it's a $21 billion market cap company, so a pretty large company. They're up 5.8% today, and they're kind of on the other stream in terms of forward PE ratio, right? They're at a 5.5. They're specifically based in energy resource based company. So kind of one on the tech side, one on the commodity side, and they engage in exploring, acquiring natural resources around the globe. They participate in the coal, copper, zinc segments, and so based on like I said, in terms of that inflationary theme. That's one of those that that we think and hold in the, hold here at the firm as well, for full disclosure. But it plays off of that theme that we've discussed pretty much most of the show today in terms of inflation. So as you look at your portfolio and some of the things that worked in the past aren't working now, give us a call. 1-855-611-BEST. That's 1-855-611-2378. Or shoot us a message, GundersonCapital.com. But happy to discuss any way we can help and position you for today's markets. But thanks for joining us, and have a great day, everyone.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.